it's time for another Society 9 podcast. This is Lynn Lee, the founder and CEO of Society 9.
And Megan, the director of marketing and sales for Society 9.
So we are here today with Natalie, and I'm totally going to butcher her last name. I'm going to see if I can do it, though. Matuszewski.
So close. Almost there.
Damn it!
That's okay. The announcer for Haymakers didn't get it right either, so, like, yeah, I just live with it.
I know, but I just, my pride, can you say it?
Matuszewski.
There you go.
Sounds much prettier when you say it, no offense, Lynn.
I know, I tried. It's so funny, I can say Joanna Janjacek, the UFC strawweight champion, but I can't apparently say your name, so that just goes to show my lack of skill. But yeah, so we have Natalie here, and she just competed in her first amateur boxing match for Haymakers for Hope, which Society 9 is a proud supporter of. We were the training and fight apparel sponsor for their most recent event called Bells of the Brawl 4, raising money for cancer research, survivorship, and care. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, just so you know who we are, Society 9 is the brand for the fight in every woman, and we make the best boxing and MMA gear out there for women by women. So I would love for Natalie to actually share a little bit about how she got into boxing, and additionally what her Haymakers experience was like. So I'm gonna give her an opportunity to share her little personal life story, take us down memory lane, and take us to where she's at today, and then we'll just go from there.
I like this memory lane thing. I could start with my being a poor Russian child. No, just kidding. Sort of. I guess I'll start actually from the beginning, because it makes sense to give a little bit more background as to why martial arts to begin with. I immigrated from the USSR, from Kiev, Ukraine specifically, in 91. And like most sort of immigrants that come to the States, parents sort of go to work and no one's really around. And I think, like, one thing that all immigrants that grew up here share is that we're latchkey kids, because parents are kind of, you know, doing their thing and trying to provide and trying to learn the language and all that. So I didn't get to do a lot of sports in high school, partly because of rides. Like, it was very difficult to get a ride after school. And most of my friends, we grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts. Most of my friends actually, like, we all got jobs after work, and we started working at like 14 years old, and before that, babysitting and whatnot. So I really didn't get a chance to get into sports until I was able to pay for sports and also drive myself there. So my dad got me a Plymouth Sundance, which was like, it fell apart in the year,
yes,
but it's still, it was like red and
yes,
the oil would drip down in the bottom, but it was my first baller car. And there was a martial arts school up the street from my house. So I kept passing by it, and I kept seeing people train, and one day I just dropped in and really liked what they had going on. It was a northern style kung fu, and these guys were cool because they were kung fu guys who were Puerto Rican, who grew up in the Bronx, so they sparred. And I was like, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, you know, not just for the art, but to actually fight. So I actually, like, got a little bit into sparring there. Then I went to another martial arts school in Millbury, and sort of just kind of continued on that path for about, I would say, 6.5 years. And then, you know, when I moved to Boston, it was the same thing. Poor college student, you know, Sally Mae was calling me, asking me to pay back my loans. I was, like, literally, like, eating ramen noodles, living in a Brighton Alston apartment that then eventually got bed bugs. You know, my boyfriend would take my ramen noodles and cook them the wrong way, and I'd be like, dude, that's my food for the week. Like, you just messed it up. So so essentially, I couldn't do – I basically tabled all martial arts for a while, and then – decided that, like, I really wanted to try boxing, partly because just, like, joints and knees ache from kung fu. I think just, like, wear and tear. So I dropped into this Woburn school, but it was too far away, and then I ended up moving to Southie a couple of years later, and Southie is known to have sort of that boxing vibe. So my friends at the time actually said, you know, you should check out Peter Welch's gym. It's down the street. I dropped in and, like, immediately fell in love with the conditioning classes and did that for many, many years. But it was kind of like that same thing. It was very sort of anticlimactic when you're just, like, hitting the bag and you're doing the sport, but you're not really doing the sport. So I decided that this was the year. I was like, I want to do a fight. Doesn't matter what my age is. I always used to have this hang up with, I'm too old, but, like, that's ridiculous. And so I decided that this would be the year, and I signed up for Haymaker for Hope, and I was lucky enough to get chosen in this bout, and then just sort of, you know, went to training. And it was a very, very unique, crazy experience, full of anxiety, and like it just feels like a complete like dream right now, like it never even happened. So that's kind of how I got there in the long, sort of long-winded way.
Yeah, no, I remember after seeing you after your fight, your like body was so like really tense, and like your hands were shaking a little bit.
It's like adrenaline.
I'm sure. Yeah. I was so impressed by everybody. There's for those of you who don't know, there was 28 female fighters. It's a USA Boxing sanctioned club event, so it does go towards all of these women's amateur record. So it was a real deal, real fight camp, training camp, and everything. 3 to 4 months of not only training and busting their asses to train, but also busting their asses to fundraise. And collectively, the group raised nearly $300,000, yeah, which is
record-breaking.
Amazing. Yeah, woo-woo. So badass. So you mentioned like the roller coaster. I mean, one can only imagine, but like what? Like, you shared with me personally some of like the crazy ups and downs, but like talk about some of like the process itself, right? For those who are not familiar with the matching process with Haymakers, and especially since it is the first time for all of you guys, you know, how much of a roller coaster it is when you fighters get injured, they have to pull out, etc. Like you had probably the most rocky, it almost seemed like.
Well, I think the first thing is sort of like, why do people do it, right? Because you're like boxing event, like somebody is punching at your head and you've never done this before. You didn't do this as a kid. And if you actually notice like who signs up for it, it's usually people that are, you know, mid 20s to older. And that's actually the cool thing about the event. I think, you know, Julie's entire goal is to say, you know what, like people do dabble in the sport. They stumble into it late in life. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't, you know, get a fight and do it for a good cause. So the way I see it is it's the same as, you know, you sign up for the New York Marathon, or you sign up for, I do this other thing, the MS bike ride every year. It's 175 miles from Boston to the Cape. And it gives sort of people a finite goal to work toward, and then you sort of have that regiment and training camp, so there's no way of backing out. Like, you're actually doing this, and you have an end in mind. So for a lot of people, they maybe just do one fight. For a lot of people, it's a great way to start in the sport, partly because it's controlled. So you usually when you fight in like Marciano tournament, you could fight sub novice, but it's like 0 to 3 fights, versus this is no one could have had a fight. So it's pretty even. That means that, you know, when you're going on that stage, it's the same experience for everybody. So you know that whoever you're fighting is not going to have, you know, 3 fights under their belt, and you only have, you know, 1 or none, and you're potentially at a disadvantage. Like it's a pretty even playing field. So I think that's why it attracts a lot of people. And I think that's why in this area anyway, and in this gym, it was sort of like the rite of passage for people to start boxing. But yeah, it's like, it's legit, you know, 100% of the way. You basically, you know, send Julie the weight every single week. You're looking to hit a target weight. I think they give you about 5 pounds, between you and your opponent. You have to, I think going into it, I was probably a little bit naive, because when you don't really know much about boxing, training itself or who you train with is tricky, because unlike martial arts, so like I know you do MMA and, you know, Muay Thai and whatnot, like if you look at most martial arts, there's like a system. So when I trained with, you know, Praying Mantis Kung Fu, I was doing Praying Mantis Kung Fu that was designed by Chan Poi. And it was like that system, and every school in the world did the same basics, drilled the same fundamentals, and you can go to, you know, a temple in Florida and you could train in Millbury and it would be like the same format, year 1, year 2, year 3. Boxing is a little different because stylistically everybody's very different. So people tend to drill the basics, but then once you kind of get past that, there are like gazillion different styles as to how people fight. And as beginners, like in my opinion, I think it's just very important to get the basics down before you learn anything else, because at the end of the day, like your first fight, your first 10 fights, I would say people say it's a brawl. Like, it's a street fight. So unless you're just training for endurance and landing a 1-2, like, you could switch step, you could, you know, pivot, you could, none of that is going to work. It doesn't matter. So, so I didn't know that coming through. So I think, you know, I started training with somebody, it didn't really, you know, pan out, and I felt my life, I didn't feel like I was getting any better. And then, Nick Sear, who was my coach, actually took me on, and he himself is a pro fighter. And it's like, literally, I trained with him July 3rd. He met me outside and we were doing mitts and he was fixing my feet. He's like, I'm going to meet you on the 4th. We met on the 4th and he's like, you're not moving your feet. And he was just like, kept drilling that for a month. Within that first day that I went into sparring, it was like night and day. Like, all of a sudden I could move. Like, I felt kind of more relaxed. I actually landed something, which was amazing because I couldn't land anything before. But before that, it was like 2 weeks before that, I sparred Amy DiPaolo, who you guys had on the podcast, and she hit me with every single punch. So it was like, all right, so obviously, you know, drilling the basics is very important. And that sort of like took an entire like load off my back in terms of training, because I was like, all right, like, he knows what he's doing. I'm just going to listen to that and, you know, forget everything else. So I think that kind of got me to have a little bit more confidence as I kept going through the training camp.
Isn't that a cool feeling when, like, you have this one day and you're sparring and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, all that drilling finally paying off.
Like, oh exactly. Man, like, my feet's moving.
Every once in a while I'll do something and I'll literally be like, I did it.
And then that's when you get hit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're like, yeah. Yes, and then you're like, boom, punch in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And that's when you know you do some form of combat sports. Right back to humility.
Yeah. Well, it's like you realize stepping in is like the hardest thing, because like you could stand still and you could block and throw something, but when you're actually on the attack, if you're not just flailing, if you're like, okay, I'm going to try to set something up, that's the scariest thing, because you're like, I'm going to try something new and it may not work and it may hurt if it doesn't.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the things that I feel is so different whenever I train, like do Muay Thai versus boxing. It's like, I feel like with boxing, it's a more calculated chess game in a different way. Like, Muay Thai, you have so many more weapons. And so, like, I know, like, the first time I had to spar Muay Thai, I was completely terrified. But I feel like now that when I compare that sparring to boxing sparring, it's like I had so many other weapons that whether I threw them right or not, it's like I had things that I just threw and hope that it works. Whereas in boxing, it's like, yeah, if you're paired up with somebody and they know how to set you up, you are fucked, like, yeah. For the whole time. But so you were talking about the training with Nick and the process of getting matched and everything. What was that like? Because again, like, when you actually told me what you went through, I was like, what? How does that even happen? Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about that, like the timeline of when you found out you were in Haymakers, and then like everything from the cutting process to the actual matchmaking process.
Yeah, I signed up for Haymakers, and we get an email from Julie basically saying that you've been selected. Then they have sort of an orientation session once they finalize the list. I'm not exactly sure how they select people. I'm sure it's, you know, based on other people signing up, so that, you know, you could sort of guarantee a scorecard at the end of the day. But we had the orientation. It was awesome. They talked about the experience. They talked about their recommended training, which is 3 days a week. I think it should be 7, just because you're learning something from scratch. And then from there you kind of go back to your gym. And I think for people that don't have a gym, they help them, they line them up with the gym and they line them up with the trainer. I had a gym and I sort of had trainers in mind, so it was a little bit easier for me. And then training camp starts, and it's the longest training camp of your life, but it feels really short because you're like, oh wait, 4.5 months or whatever it is to the fight, like, that is such a short time. How am I ever, like, going to learn how to box in that time? But then you realize that actual fighters train, what is it, 8 to 10 weeks before the fight? So you actually have an additional 2 months to train, which you start feeling 2 months in, because you're like, oh my God, I just want this to be over with. Like, I just want to resume my life and pick it up where it started. And so I went into training, and I was already working out at the gym, but I think the biggest thing for me was tabling everything I knew about fitness or what I thought I knew and realizing that training for a fight is just fundamentally different than anything else. So Nick basically, like I also travel a lot for work, so Nick would text me the workouts to do while I was on the road, but everything was very methodical, and I would get yelled at for adding things to all the time because it's like, dude, you're not training for a marathon, you're training for a fight, so stop like adding things because you're going to wear yourself out. But I realized that when my body started breaking, so then I was like, okay, really? I should stop doing what I'm trying to do. But so we, so basically he started me off with building strength and endurance and it was, you know, mitt work. But the strength part was lifting heavier than I lifted before. It was very specific workouts. It was a full body lifting workout. At the end of that workout, there would be a series of like either really long sprints or short sprints. Basically the idea behind it is that, you get your body up to work at a max and stay there, because when you get in the ring, your heart rate jumps and then people freak out because they can't breathe. So that's actually what is the scariest thing for most fighters, is that they finish second round and they're like, oh my God, like how am I going to do the third one? But his whole thing is like, the one thing you should know is that you're always going to recover. Like once you finish this training camp, you will recover and you'll recover fast. So that was like the first month. And then on top of that, it was just drilling, moving my head, moving my feet and synchronization, and like just straight punches, and sparring. And the first month of sparring was like a horrific experience because I couldn't sleep at all. So like I would come back on a Tuesday night from sparring and then I'd just like be awake on Wednesday. And then Thursday I'd come in and I was so tired from Tuesday, but I'd still go in on Thursday, and then I couldn't spar on Thursday night. So basically for the first month, I like just didn't sleep. and so that was crazy. And then there wasn't a day that I was like, oh, this is a sparring day, I'm so excited. In like the second part of training, it was primarily endurance. So it was a lot of like sprint work. It was a lot of, he does this workout that basically jacks up your heart rate and allows you to recover for the rounds. So he's only training you for those three rounds. And then it was just sparring different people. So, I went down in weight. That was another thing, is that I didn't want to fight girls that were in their 130s because usually those girls are a head taller than me and I would be at a disadvantage. So I went down to 120 pounds and then kind of tried to hover around there because we weren't sure if the opponents were going to be less than me or more than me. And I wanted to have weight advantage, which, believe it or not, I didn't know that it works, but it actually does. So the only reason why I know that is because there was a girl that came in to spar from another gym and she was 140, but Nick thought she would come in at 125. She was lifting heavy. She threw a punch, and I swear to God, I think my head was going to roll off. I was like, that hurt so bad. He pulled me out up to two rounds, and I was like, yeah, she's definitely not 125. So we sparred like different people every week in the second bout of it. And so you kind of get comfortable with the nerves of going into the unknown. And then I think the best sparring partner that I had was this girl, Lindsay, who did two collegial fights. And the girl just threw like a gazillion punches around. So like sparring her every week was like, oh man, I'm going to have to work. This is not going to be like an easy thing. And so it was just like so severe anxiety the entire way through. And then on top of that, the logistics of the fight was pretty brutal. And this is something that we talked about. But right before I flew out to Seattle, probably middle of August, I think, my opponent came down to spar me at Foreman's on media day. And I don't know if this girl like didn't really think that this was going to be like a real boxing match or what, but she just wasn't ready. And as much as my coach will say, oh, you beat her up, like, I still think that she just kind of ran into me and then her footwork wasn't right. So she just fell. And she fell probably three times in the first round. And then they didn't want her to take the fight just because it just wouldn't have been an even match. The second day we find out that she dropped out. So now it's you know, a month to the fight and I don't have an opponent. And I fundraised. Right. I fundraised in like 2 days at the minimum. So I was like, okay, now what? So that was another thing. It was like, do I even have a fight? 2 weeks before the fight, Julie and I are messaging, and it was like coming down to the wire. We thought about fighting one of the girls at my gym, but that would have been weird because it's like you're fighting, you know, your friends that are training with you. So, and you know, they're not prepared for it. They haven't been in a training camp, so it's a disadvantage for them. But sort of like literally two weeks before the fight, Julie found my opponent who came from this boxing gym in Waltham, and you know, I could say that 100% confidence, like she was no slouch. She was pretty good, and they took the fight. We sparred at my gym, and then you know, I ended up fighting her in the haymaker. But like literally for a month, I was like, "Is this going to happen? Am I going to get bumped to May? You know, I don't want to go into training camp in May or in March. Like, I just want to have happy hour sometime in my near future." So so yeah, it was crazy. It was a really interesting journey.
That's awesome. Like, that's awesome that you guys, not only was Julie, so those of you who don't know Julie is, she was also a guest on our podcast. She's the co-founder of Haymakers for Hope. But it's so awesome that not only was she able to find you a replacement, but hey, I mean, I watched the fight and you guys both looked amazing. Like, she looked, you wouldn't have even known that she came in. In fact, I actually didn't even know she was a replacement 2 weeks just prior.
She was good.
At all. Yeah.
Yep, she's fought, she just fought, I just watched her fight in Marciano this weekend. She didn't win, but she held her own. Like, she really, really did her own. Her biggest thing is she just walked backwards, but I think it's just experience, just, like, training herself to not look away. But yeah, like, the girl was good, and I felt better fighting somebody who, you know, was on par, because you're like, you never want to step into something that's, like, completely uneven. You want it to be an even match, and you know, you want to be challenged ultimately, and she definitely, I think she has a great, you know, run ahead of her, and I'm pretty sure we're going to see her on the scene.
That's awesome. So what was, like, when you were done, like when you actually got out of the ring, what's that rush feel like?
Well, first of all, I didn't think I won.
I'm always curious about that.
First, I was like, I looked over, so here's what happened. So it was a unanimous decision. I felt really good the first round. The second round, she sort of started to get warmed up. And then the third round, I was gassed, but she decided to, like, come at me. And so I think the third round was her best round, and the first round was my best round. So what happened was is that I ended up turning my head because I was, like, if I went one way, I would have hit the ropes. And if I went the other way, my feet weren't right. So I knew I would have, like, tripped over myself. So I got out the only way I could get out, which was, like, kind of finagle. And it looked like I went backward. And when I sat down after that round, I looked at my coach and I was like, I lost. And he's like, yeah, you turned around. And I was like, oh, man. I was like, that sucks. So when they actually announced my name as unanimous decision, I was like, what? I was like totally surprised. I was like, all right, I guess I'll take it. So I didn't know I won. Mm-hmm. So that was amazing. And then he was, I guess, asking behind the scenes. He actually knows the judges, and he's like, did she really win? And they're like, yeah, she worked more, she threw more. And then he asked Julie, he's like, did she win? And Julie's like, yeah, she there was, like, no brainer, she threw more. And he was like, oh, I guess you won. I was like, thanks, bro. That's nice. So
way to be confident. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So I get off the stage and I was just like, what the hell just happened? Like, and this is my favorite part of the whole entire fight. This is, like, the one thing that I just remember vividly. So I'm in the ring after the first round, and, like, when you first step on the stage, it's, like, you know, whatever, 1,500 plus people. It's just, like, a huge, intimidating crowd, but you don't see anyone for the first 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. Then you adjust to the lights, and you see this, like, massive crowd, and up front are all my friends. So in, like, this daze, I see my colleague's ex-husband or ex-boyfriend at the fight, so I guess he brought him, which I haven't seen him in a while, and I love the guy, and I was so surprised to see him there. So I'm sitting in my chair, and I just hear his voice being like, Natalie, and I just, like, look over at him, and I'm like, hey, and I wave, and Nick, my coach, just looks at me and goes, don't you look over there, focus, are you here to fight, or are you here to say hi to people? And I was like, oh my god, this is so sad, I'm getting yelled at. So that was, like, my one pivotal moment that I remember.
That's
yeah.
Hey, whatever keeps you relaxed,
whatever.
That's like, it's so good to see you.
Yeah, for me, it's so funny, not so much with fighting, but, like, when I was a rower, I feel like I would always get in trouble because I would talk to my competitors, like, so much that it would annoy them, but it was just me being, like, friendly, and, like, that's how I would get my nervous energy out and stay relaxed. I'd be like, how's your day going? Like, we'd be in our boat. It's funny, right? Because everyone relaxes a different way, and, like, it's not good to go into competition, like, super tense and freaking out. So, like, when I was a rower, I would, like, get rid of that energy by, like, talking, like, just talking all the time. And I would, like, talk to my competitors and be like, oh, man, beautiful weather we're having. Wow. Like, we'd be in our boats, like, next to each other by the start line, and I'd be talking. I'm sure it drove people crazy. So you waving to your friend makes so much sense to me, because that, like, for me, and even before my first fight, I tried my best to, like, talk to people and, like, hang out, right? Another day, no big deal. We're not about to compete and, like, have something on our record and be judged.
Exactly. And it's funny, too, because, like, boxing at the same time is, like, so, again, comparing it to cycling or rowing or those sports, they're team sports. And usually it's, like, you know, one person pulls, the other one follows, and everyone kind of has a plan. Like, when you're drafting in a line and cycling, there's somebody that's going to take turns to pull the team. So you're drafting up from them, and then somebody who needs to be pulled, so they're in the back, and they're, you know, maybe slower, but they're looking to keep up with the pace line. Boxing at the same time, it was, like, such a weird dynamic, because, like, the Haymaker team said, you know, share your story, share your, you know, training on Instagram, on Facebook. People love to see that stuff because it's so unique. But then, like, first weekend, you're like, oh my God, wait a second. I don't want somebody to see me on the mitts or sparring and, like, study my movements and see that I drop my hand. So then everybody got super paranoid. So if you actually notice, like, I think only the Foreman, the George Foreman girls that fought, maybe posted, like, one or two videos. But for the most part, like, no one did. So, like, everybody was, like, very, like, super, you know, secretive and quiet about it. And then it wasn't really until, like, after the fight, we've been using that app Slack to communicate for logistics. And it wasn't until after the fight, like, all the girls were like, oh my God, it was such an awesome experience. Like, these are all the things that I ate afterwards. But during it, like, no one said a word. It was, like, silence. Everybody was just super paranoid about finding out competitive intelligence. And then when we were trying to figure out who my opponent was, we were just looking at, like, general, like, weights that girls listed and kind of guessing, and then trying to find, you know, videos of them on the mitts to see how they're doing. And so it was definitely, like a FBI, due diligence, CIA effort. Yeah.
I'm going through that right now. I have a fight on November 5th in Pittsburgh. And that's Dion is like, nope, we're not recording anything. You do. He keeps taking before and after training pictures of me and posting them.
So, that's awesome. He's just proud.
And it's, but it's the same. And then, you know, it's like, yeah, I probably spent about 2 hours trying to find anything and everything I could about my competitor. So Yeah, and I may or may not have changed all my profile pictures to ridiculous pictures of me as a chubby child. It's possible. I don't know. Maybe.
You're like, no, I'm really slow. Just sit on the couch. Haven't done any cardio. Yeah. You know, just chilling.
Just me, 9-year-old at a tea party. Nothing to worry about here.
That's the other funny thing is the video montage that they show. I think, like, if anybody goes to the previous Haymakers, they see that and they're like, oh man, I want one for me. But what you realize is, like, what it takes to shoot something and make it look good, like how media could ultimately augment whatever it is that you do. Those video montages looked amazing. They made us look like we were Rocky training, you know, in Rocky V in Russia, carrying bricks. Like, it was unbelievable. In the background, you're like, my knee hurts, my shoulder hurts. I can't bend that way.
I was sparring yesterday. I don't want to be here.
Exactly. And, you know, my hair is frizzy. So, yeah, it was interesting.
So what's next for you? Are you wanting to compete again? Or, like, what's, do you need to take a break? Because obviously that was a really emotionally, like, rewarding, but also physically and emotionally taxing experience. What's next for you?
You know, it's like, I got the bug, because it's one of those things, like, you put so much time in, because this is probably athletically the most intense things that I think I've ever done, partly because there was, like, a definite end date. And it wasn't like training for a kung fu tournament. There was something very different about it, partly because, again, somebody is going to hit you in the ring. So so I changed. My entire social life changed. Like, I used to be the person people would text, and I'd roll out. And I'm not exactly sure if people still invite me anywhere anymore, because I just said no so many times that, like, I don't have any friends anymore. So it was a huge, like, I would say, life change. It was a dietary change, and it kind of gets you obsessed with the gym and obsessed with training. So you get to that certain point, and I would say, like, that's kind of where I got in that 4 months, where sparring is not fun, but it's less anxiety, and it's cool to see things come out that you haven't seen before. Like, it's cool to see yourself finally, like, progress beyond a certain point. And I would hate to just kind of, like, scrap all that and just move on to something else. So so I'd like to, like, I sparred with one of our girls is actually fighting in the Marciano tournament, Amy Pro. She's a beast. And so I sparred her just to, like, help her out, and have a body for her to chase in the ring, because she can kill me easily, but, you know, I did my part. And that was really fun. And it was like, okay, like, I'm getting into it. Like, it's a familiar feeling. It's not scary. You kind of have your three things that you do that work. So I think I have definitely one more fight in me this year. And probably going to do, like, in my mind, it's like, it's three fights. That's how I see it. I want to do three fights, see where that goes, and then figure out, you know, if I want to stick with the sport. But I also, like, do a ton of stuff. There, I mean, cycling, and I really want to become the Bachata Queen of Boston. So,
oh, well then.
Venturing into the world of that, too. Here and there.
So the next time we're in Boston, we know what we're doing on our off hours.
Well, you know? Funny you should mention that, because I'm in Boston this weekend, so.
Salsa night.
That's right, yeah.
Lynn's, I hear there's salsa night and mojitos. Yeah.
Ooh.
There you go.
I could be enticed. What's the timeline for your, you said three fights. Are there two specific tournaments or anything that you're looking at? And what's the timeline?
So Nick said that, you know, we could do a fight, like, this year if there's anybody that's around. I don't know if there's to be honest, I don't even know. Like, that's the other thing that baffles me, the organization of boxing. I don't really get how it works. Because, like, people have fights, they have a set amount of fights, and, like, the Marciano tournament, like, somebody signs up, they think they're fighting, but then their opponent drops out and there's no backup, so then they're not fighting. So it's very, like, disorganized, but I just think that's just, like, the nature of the sport. Nothing is set in stone in it. So if we could get one somehow, great. If not, then I'd probably train for Marciano next year. That would be kind of cool to do. And then do that. And then, you know, who knows? There's a couple of girls that did the gloves. I don't know if I'd go that far, because I think just, like, traveling and training is really, really, really hard. Because you're, especially, like, in my business, I take clients out for dinners. So if you're like, no, I'm just going to sip my water over here, or you guys have the wine, enjoy it, you know, and enjoy the carbs. I'm just going to over here eat this lean protein and sip my water. It's just weird. So I just needed to kind of, like, balance it out and figure out, like, if I can get a routine on the road, and if I can, then great. And if I can't, I just, like, I never want to go into it thinking that I could have done more. So, but gotta focus on what pays the college loans, man. I'm almost done, so gotta push through.
Man. Good for you. I don't even want to start talking about. What would, if you could go back and change anything from your experience, like your training experience, the cutting experience, or even just, like, the mental preparation? Like, what would you either recommend, or, like, what would you say that you would fix or change if you could go back?
So three things. Go into it with an expectation that you are going to train really. So I think for me, it's just, like, understanding how much the training is, because I think it's, as a novice, you don't really know. Like, you don't really have a concept, because it's not like training for a race or anything else. So really do some research on that before jumping into it. I think I still would have done it, because, you know, again, it's sort of like what I wrote in my blog, stepping into the unknown. But I think I definitely underestimated how much work it was going to be. The second thing is, I probably would have researched coaches better and talked to a lot more people in the conversation. I mean, at the end of the day, it all worked out for me. But I think that having the person that you like undividedly trust, that's the key thing, because ultimately that's the person that you're relying on to get you to that level to be able to win the fight. And if you have somebody that is, you know, either one foot in, one foot out, or, you know, that hasn't really fought, doesn't really know how to teach, or doesn't mesh with you stylistically, then it's not a good match, and you're set up to lose. So I think there was a little bit of drama on my side of that in the beginning, but that got straightened out, so it all worked out. So those are the two things. Maybe I would have pushed harder to get a sponsor. Like, I feel like I asked a couple people, but because I also fundraise for the MS Society, it was very difficult to dip into the same fundraising pool, and I felt really bad about that. But everybody showed up, and everybody still donated, so it was awesome. But I was like, maybe I should have done like one charity per year, as opposed to every disease under the sun.
Cure all the diseases.
Yeah, all I want to cure everything. So
yeah, I think everybody else does too.
That's awesome. I guess the one question I would have too is, you know, what advice would you give to women who are, you know, it's one thing to be going, you know, thinking about your first fight. What about women who maybe have heard about this, or Haymakers or any other organization, and they're thinking of even just getting into boxing? I guess it's similar. I feel like I say a lot of the same things, right? Like, research your gyms, research the coaches. But is there anything, like, any advice you could give to women who see this and hear this and think, like, maybe I should give it a go finally?
Yeah, I think the key is to give yourself some time, jump in a ring and spar. Usually, you know, I mean, there's different type of gyms. There's some to say that, you know, okay, we're going to throw you in, you're going to do a 4-minute round, 30-second rest, and that's how we roll. But I think most gyms that are coming up today that have that combination of fitness and boxing, they won't do that to you. So if you're really thinking about it, you know, be serious about it, go buy the headgear, buy the shoes, you know, buy the 16-ounce Society 9 mitts, and then, you know, get in there, and, you know, whether you're just doing just a job, but like, get a feel for it, get a feel for moving your head, and work on the basics, and it becomes less scary, and it does become just, you know, another strategic sport. Like, you don't necessarily have to have immense amounts of aggression to want to do it, but I think that it's just, you know, it's good to get in the ring, because hitting the bag, people say, oh, I box, and they go to do a boxing workout. I think it's awesome. It's a great form of fitness. Right. It is going to get you in shape, but it's not boxing. It's a form of a cardio workout. Boxing is really, you're coming at someone and somebody's coming at you, and you're working on, you know, blocking, defending, hitting, scoring, etc. But I think that with the right people, and I think the cool thing about the sport is that now there's this emergence of women that support each other in the sport, and I think everybody is sort of almost like wired the same way too, which is kind of cool. You know, there's a huge sort of, I guess, a feminist resurgence or uprising in a sport that's, you know, primarily male dominated. And that's who you want to surround yourself with, because that's the people that's going to prop you up and help you get better.
Yeah, I definitely liken it to like having a tribe. You know, I think that there is like a solid tribal understanding of one another, especially when you've stepped in the ring, whether competitively or to spar. It's like, you know the pain. Okay, I almost said it's a rhyme and I just stopped myself. I was gonna say, you know the pain, but you also know the game.
That's the rhyme.
Oh my god, that was really, I love stupid. It literally was about to come out of my mouth, and then I was like, oh my god, I sound like an idiot.
I think there's the rap career in your future too.
Yeah, seriously. I know. Add that to my list of skills. But yeah, no, but seriously, I think there's like a sense of camaraderie and just knowing like that not just the physical struggle, but that mental struggle too, of like overcoming the fear of getting hit, or overcoming
yourself.
Yeah, exactly. That you can't do this, can't do that, can't move your head, can't move your feet, can't throw a jab, whatever. It's like, it's a different level of understanding that you have, or a connection that you have with fellow women who, like, just, they just put themselves out there and see what happens, and then
you gotta start somewhere. Yep. Everybody starts at the base level. Everybody starts somewhere. I think, you know, to talk about like Sheryl Sandberg leaning, I mean, I love that book so much, because she really talks about the dynamics between men and women, and women and women. And I think the initial reaction, especially in boxing, is that women are kind of cautious of each other, like, oh, what is she doing? You know, I'm the dominant female here or whatnot. But I think that like once that sort of dissipates, like, it becomes becomes a really great community, and I find that more likely than not, it actually becomes a lot more open than that initial kind of competition for, you know, I'm the top dog here among the guys, and, you know, I'm one of the females that fights. So the cool thing about this gym specifically is that there's, like, a handful of awesome girls that continue to fight, and, you know, they're going on to Jen Perello, one of the girls that Nyx trains. She's a mother of two. The girl is a beast. Like, she is unbelievable, and she's about to go open. I think she has, like, three more fights to go. And, like, that's my inspiration. That's, like, holy shit, you're telling me that, like, if I have kids and if I have a family, should I choose to do that, I could also do this. And that's like, totally inspirational to me. So
that's awesome. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on our podcast today. If you guys haven't read yet, she actually wrote a really great night before reflection, the night before her fight for Haymakers. And we she kindly let us repost it on our blog, so you can check it out on our Facebook or on our website. But yeah, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Guys, thanks for having me, and I'm putting in an order for my gloves. I can't decide between the black or the white ones. The struggle is real. The choices.
Make it count.
Exactly. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Right. Bye.
Thanks.